This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Ideas Network. President Donald Trump held his first solo news conference yesterday and blasted the media for portraying his administration as being in turmoil. He says it's just the opposite, that the White House is running like a fine-tuned machine. Do you agree with that or not? We will run that question by our guests and discuss other top stories in the news during this edition of The Week in Review. If you would like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our Week in Review guests. Van Mobley is an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and he is president of the Village of Thiensville. He writes a regular column for the Ozaukee News Graphic. Good morning, Van.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Also back with us is Bill Leaders. He is the associate editor of the Progressive Magazine and also a columnist. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Hey, I got a promotion. I'm managing editor now.
Managing editor. All right. Well, thanks for joining us on your busy schedule. lots to talk about here, and I hardly know where to start, so I'm going to ask you both to give me your main takeaway. What struck you the most about President Trump's news conference yesterday, his first solo news conference? Bill, what did you take away?
Well, I think everyone agrees that it was astonishing for a president to appear before the media and be that obviously unhinged, that disassociated from reality, that overtly dishonest, and to say things like his administration is running like a fine-tuned machine. I mean, that's only true if by running like a fine-tuned machine you mean a complete disaster full of a series of self-inflicted wounds. If that's what you mean by fine-tuned machine, then that's a true statement. Otherwise, it's just bonkers. And much of what the president said was frightening to come from the mouth of someone in a position of such power, to have that disdain for the media, for one thing, which I resent deeply, and for him to be so dishonest in his pronouncements, to go back to his false claim about how well he did in the election, winning the Electoral College by more than anyone since Ronald Reagan, and then refusing to acknowledge that there was an error in that statement simply because it's manifestly and demonstrably untrue. Very frightening performance. I think we all should be scared. And I think many people are scared. We're seeing it on the right and on the left. Bernie Goldberg on Fox News last night was critical of the president. Shepard Smith came out with a stunning rebuke, the Fox News host, of the president for his comments on the media. It's a scary time in America.
We'll go into some more detail as we go along, but your main takeaway, Van Mobley, from the news conference?
I thought he was Trump being Trump, and that's okay for me because I voted for it, and I know how he, sort of some of his style. But what I liked a lot is he drew attention to some of the actions that his administration has taken, which I fully support, and that's why I voted for him. And you know very well, Joy, that I was pounding away on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I wanted it dead. I wanted a stake through its heart a long time ago, and he did that. So he carried through. I don't think Hillary would have, and it was a bad deal, bad for the American workers, and it's gone. So I'm very thankful for that. He also drew attention to the work on the regulatory freeze and rollback. Better relations, I would point to. He's working very hard on foreign policy. We already have better relations with Japan and Britain than did the Obama administration as it went out the door, and that'll continue to improve. Got Mattis and Tillerson dispatched overseas doing the work of the American people, forwarding his foreign policy vision. And I think that we're getting better vetting processes on immigration, even as the courts gum us up on the implementation of what was always a temporary travel ban while we got better vetting processes in place. Now, they're working on the better vetting processes, even if we're not getting any cooperation out of the court system. And I think the court is out of line and will eventually... Trump will prevail on this.
Yeah. So, Van, just following up first on the claim that the White House is running like a fine-tuned machine, do you think it is truly running as a fine-tuned machine?
I think it's improving. Getting a government up and going is not an easy thing for any administration, and you expect some sort of foul-ups and glitches. I think they're getting better over time. They're getting better at the internal communications. Hopefully they'll improve on coordination on the messaging for the day and that sort of thing. I know Secretary of State Baker was there talking to him. He was formerly very successful chief of staff for Reagan, talking to some of the staff members about ways that they could improve, and I think that they will over time. And so I think they're getting better every day, and that's what I would say.
Well, you think they couldn't get any worse, but you never know. You know, this defense strikes me as typical when I hear people defend Donald Trump still, and I think there's fewer of those people these days, but they cherry-pick things, and they say things that he didn't say, and they frame arguments that he didn't make, which make him sound good. What we saw at that press conference was not reassuring. And by any measure, this first month of this administration has been a disaster. Compared to other rollouts, it's been much more chaotic. We've had the president fire the acting attorney general. We've had him having to fire his national security advisor for lying. His labor secretary pick has had to resign because he couldn't get enough Republican support. He reached out to a former admiral, Robert Harward, to become the new national security director. That person refused the job. I mean, then there's his Muslim ban, which the courts have deemed unconstitutional, in which the Trump administration has had to admit is constitutionally indefensible. They have to go back to square one. Again, another blunder, a self-inflicted wound, something that created chaos and discord, and in the end achieved nothing other than to rile people up and create pain.
Yeah, here, Jillian Rhinelander called in to say that with President Trump's continued references to the electoral totals, he seems to be a sore winner. Why does he keep doing this? Van, how about that?
Well, I don't know. I think he likes to talk about it. I confess with Gail, I think he should move on from that.
Yeah. You know, he did make that statement, and Bill Leaders, you mentioned it. He said, I had the highest electoral college totals or win in since Reagan. And the reporter did fact check him live.
He just read the numbers. I mean, this is a Google search. You can do it in 15 seconds.
And then the president said, those were the numbers I was given.
Yeah. What kind of excuse is that? You know, what reporter, what media outlet would fall back on that if confronted with an inaccuracy, which does happen. But just to show the difference between media who try to get things right and Donald Trump, who doesn't care whether what he says is true or not, you know, no media outlet would come back and say, well, that's what we heard. You know, we have no basis for it. We have no substantiation, no facts, nothing to point to. And if you look at the actual facts, they contradict what we're saying. But, you know, that's what we heard. Isn't that good enough for you?
I would go back to what Bill said earlier and just flip it. And that is, Bill thinks things are important that are not really my priorities. And I think my priorities are important. And the other things, you know, don't have as much sort of force in my head, and I told you what my priorities were, and I'd actually like to know what Bill thinks, for example, about the rejection of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I know a lot of Bernie Sanders voters wanted that thing gone. Are they not happy that it's gone? That was a very big deal.
Yeah, I think there is some relief that has gone among people who are on the left. And, you know, I believe that Hillary Clinton, having vowed to reject that deal, would have rejected it, too. So it's a zero-sum proposition. No matter who won the election, the TPP was going to die. So I just don't see that as a huge feather in the president's cap.
Yeah. Bill, let it be known that he was, alarmed by the media bashing that was going on, among other things. What do you make of the continued claims that it's fake news, except for the Fox show morning show?
Well, I think that Washington has throughout the campaign and continuing, and in this I would include the press in it. I mean, a lot of times they do get spoofed, and you know they do run fake news, and you know they need to improve as well. I mean,
like what?
Most people need to improve.
Like what? What fake news are you talking about?
Maybe how about Bill that the media focuses on the disarray and not on the achievements that Van thinks are the priorities.
Well, there's been more disarray than achievement, so I think that's defensible. I just want to read you two or three sentences from what Shepard Smith said yesterday after that press conference. Trump keeps repeating ridiculous throwaway lines that are not true at all and sort of avoided this issue of Russia as if we're some kind of fools for asking the question. Really? Your opposition was hacked and the Russians were responsible for it and your people were on the phone with Russia on the same day it was happening and we're fools for asking the question? We need to defend the media. We need to defend the right of people to ask questions of the President of the United States. And we have to insist that the President answer legitimate questions and not simply shrug them off and attack the people who ask them.
Yeah.
This is a task for all of us. Everyone in this democracy has a stake in a free and functioning press, which is under attack by this lunatic.
Van, what about, is there...
Let me go back to that. Let me just go back to what Bill was talking about there. I certainly think that people have the right to ask questions, but let me just add something on that. On this, the United States' relationship with Russia is important, and it needs to be as good as it can be. And I would caution Bill and encourage him to go and read some things in some left-wing magazines like The Nation, where Professor Cohen, who's a very knowledgeable person on Russian issues, I'm sure Bill knows. We need to be careful about what we're doing with the Russian relationship, and we need to stop politicizing it, because we have to have relations with Russia, and sometimes we're getting a little bit of politicization in that relationship. Yeah. That's all I would say.
I did better than that. I read what you wrote about it. I've looked up an op-ed that you wrote that was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which you'd call for better relations with Russia. And that makes sense to me. I have no problem with us having better relations with Russia. I'm not spurring for a war with that country. But there are some very serious issues that have been raised about Russia's involvement in the election. We know, as a matter of confirmed fact, that Russia tried to interfere in the election in order to slant votes toward Donald Trump. We know that there were communications between Trump's staff with Russian officials prior to the election. And we know that his national security advisor lied about his own contacts with the Russians and was fired for it. So these are fairly serious things. They require investigation. They require answers. None of this says that we shouldn't have some functioning relationship with Russia that isn't war. It just says that there are concerns that need to be addressed.
Let me jump in because we do have a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the U.S.-Russian relationship. We'll talk more about the calls for an investigation into the alleged contact between the Trump campaign and officials in Russia. And we'll talk more about the National Security Advisor resigning this week, a forced resignation over this issue. And we'll welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review, talking this week with Bill Leaders, managing editor of The Progressive Magazine, and Van Mobley, who is an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Van Mobley and Bill Leaders. We are covering the top stories in politics this week, and we're welcoming your questions and your input too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take some calls. We have John in Burlington with us. Hi, John.
Good morning. Hey, I just wanted to say I was listening to the speech in the car as I was driving yesterday, and I guess I could equate it to this: if that was a business meeting you were sitting in, how many minutes of that speech would you just be sitting there rolling your eyes, saying "Get to the point"? There was about 5 minutes of actual content and response to questions. The rest was just, you know, this ranting. And how is he functioning in the Oval Office if that's the way he focuses himself on issues? It was just insulting to me and to anybody, really.
Yeah. Van, you want to react to that?
I think that he relayed some information that I found very useful and helpful. You know, sometimes people find certain styles distasteful. I'll be honest, and I don't want to cast stones or anything. Sometimes when I would drive around and listen to Obama press conferences, he tended to ramble on, and he rambled on in a more of a professorial way. And sometimes I'm like, oh, come on, Barack, get to the point. Part of that was because I didn't vote for Barack, and I oftentimes was opposed to his political initiative, so I tended to want to nitpick him, and I think that that's what happens. It's just natural.
Let me take Pat in Milwaukee next. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys.
Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I've been standing up in front of the press for 80 minutes without any pre-approved questions, calling on anybody who wanted to ask, staying there as long as absolutely possible, is refreshing. And you know, the people that didn't vote for Trump, they don't like Trump. They're never going to cut him a break, no matter what he does. So, you know, my perception of this when I hear folks like Bill Leaders just calling him a lunatic and just completely sounding unhinged about it, to me, that just illustrates how effective that press conference was.
Really?
Based on the reactions I'm seeing from the folks like Bill Leaders in the media. And they're not above criticism. I mean, the difference is when you look at Obama's first press conference, I saw a side-by-side last night. It was very interesting in the tone, the questions that he received, the respect he was given. And this is a different president. And I get that it's not, quote-unquote, normal, but that's okay. That's what we all voted for, and maybe that's what this country needs.
Yeah, well, Bill, your reaction to that?
I get that people like that people like to cheer him on as he brawls one fight after another. But this is not what our country is facing. We're not facing a crisis over the image of Donald Trump. That is his singular concern. It's not what he should be focused on if he wants to lead the nation. And 90% of that conference was about Donald Trump, because Donald Trump cares about one thing to the exclusion of almost everything else, and that's Donald Trump. And he made that perfectly clear every minute of that press conference that was his overriding concern, and it's not presidential, and it's not healthy, and it's frightening.
Well, you know, besides saying that his administration was off to a good start and that it was running like a fine-tuned machine, and just berating the media as being dishonest for the most part, he also... He also said that the leaks are real that led to the forced resignation of his national security advisor, Michael Flynn. But on the other hand, let's take a listen.
And the leaks are absolutely real. The news is fake because so much of the news is fake.
So, Bill, how can the leaks be real and the news be fake?
Good question. I have no idea. It's completely incomprehensible. It's incoherent to say that the leaks are real, but the news about the leaks are fake. I'll say this about the Trump affair. I do have a certain amount of sympathy for Mike Flynn. How could he possibly have known that in the Trump administration you could get in trouble for lying? I mean, that must have just blindsided him.
Yes,
Van, go ahead.
I want to be filled with righteous indignation here for a moment and talk about something that every American, particularly those who believe in civil liberties on the left, should be worried about, and that is the intelligence agencies of the United States government taping conversations and then leaking them selectively, and that is illegal. And Bill knows it as well as I do. And there's one other thing that when we were talking about the Russians and stuff, it is very true that foreign powers and maybe even, you know, internal agents in our intelligence agencies are interested in manipulating the process for ends of which neither Bill nor I know, nor you, Joy, and I am against it. And I think that President Trump is very right to point his finger at it, and we need to ferret it out quickly and put a stop to it.
Bill, what about, are the leaks unimportant?
Well, I'll say this about the recording things. I've never heard a recording from Flynn's conversations. It hasn't been played for any media outlet that I'm aware of. Some people who have heard it within government, because it was appropriate that it was shared with them, have spoken to the media about some of the content, but that's not what Mike Flynn got fired for. And in fact, the president made that very clear, that he didn't care if Mike Flynn, in fact, he supported Mike Flynn engaging in ad hoc negotiations with the Russians. What Flynn got fired for is lying to the vice president of the United States and losing the trust of the administration. Those are facts that were presented and confirmed by the Trump administration. It has nothing to do with the content of these tapes.
You know,
Bill, wait, I want to go back and just ask Bill again a question here. You say that no one has heard them or whatever. You don't know that. What we do know is we know that people in the employ of the American government went to certain press agencies with information that was derived from tapped phone conversations. Now, if you want to sort of parse words on whether that's leaking and they didn't actually leak the
transcript. That's not what I'm parsing here.
Yeah, so what about the leaks?
I didn't hear it. I haven't heard this tape. And the New York Times, when it wrote about it, it apparently hadn't heard it. I don't think the reporters here have it's been played for the reporters who have written about it. On the issue of recording calls, you know, everybody should know, particularly if you're the National Security Advisor or about to become the National Security Advisor of the United States, that calls between U.S. citizens and Russian officials are recorded. If you don't know that, God help you.
Yeah. Now, and let me then expand upon that, because this is the way that the intelligence game can be played and used to smear people. I was active in politics in the past year. I oftentimes spoke to members of the foreign press. I still do. Anyone who knows anything knows that some of those members of the foreign press that I have spoken to are probably intelligence agents.
Wait. You did this as village president of Thiensville?
Of course. I talked to them. And you can go back and look. And I've been quoted in foreign papers, because they want to talk to American people involved in the American democratic process. Now, if you went back later in time and said, oh, you were talking to the X and such, you know, who works for this foreign news agency, did you know that that person was an intelligence agent? Well, I don't know that, and they may not be, but sometimes they are.
Go ahead and record my calls. Every call that I make to the Soviet Union, every call I make to Russia, go ahead and record it. I've got nothing to hide.
Van, let me ask you, though, bringing this back to what happened this week and what President Trump said yesterday. He said that what Michael Flynn did, there was nothing wrong with what he did, that talking to the ambassador, the Russian ambassador, about sanctions that were placed on Russia by the Obama administration, that before Donald Trump took office, that was okay to do that. Do you think that was okay to do that?
Well, I think it certainly is okay for an incoming administration to have figures that are in contact with people from other governments. For example, Obama's eventual ambassador to Russia was actually over in Moscow. So nobody thinks that it's off the table for them to meet and interact with people who they may, you know, have business dealings with later. And it's also not unusual for example, I would expect the ambassador to Russia to be asking all kinds of questions and talking about whatever he talked about. And since I haven't seen the tape, I have no idea. I mean, if you just field questions from someone or say whatever, and you know, is that what they're howling about him at? On the reason why he was removed, I think Flynn was removed because they had personality conflicts and issues, and there was just sort of, it wasn't going to work going forward. And when that happens, I mean, what are you going to do? From Trump's perspective, he's sad about it, but he's got to move forward.
But those conflicts stem from the fact that Flynn lied. And
well, Flynn told the vice president that he did, that sanctions did not come up with in his discussions with
and
the ambassador.
And we know that they did, and he admitted, okay, maybe they did. Well, they did, and you know, we don't know the substance of those communications. If you're asking me, Van, whether it's possible that what was discussed was innocent and didn't cross any sort of line, yes, absolutely that's possible. But since we don't know what it was, we can't draw that conclusion definitively. It requires investigation. Maybe they were talking about, you know, you help us win this election and here's some of the things that we will do for you. We don't know the substance of those communications. Those are unanswered questions. Those are things that need to be investigated.
Yeah,
and then when we investigate, we also would, of course, have to look very closely at the people who are leaking things to the New York Times that they ought not be leaking.
So a lot of Democrats are also asking, when did the president know? What did he know, and when did he know it? Here is Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland. Let's take a listen.
Who at the White House decided to do nothing for 3 weeks as Flynn sat in on meeting after meeting after meeting. Did the president decide to wait? Did counsel decide to wait? Something is wrong here.
So, Van, shouldn't this be investigated, if not by Congress, by a special prosecutor?
Well, what Representative Cummings is suggesting is if Flynn had to go, that he didn't move quickly enough on it. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a corporate CEO just on Wednesday, and he said about this very issue, you know, he moved pretty fast. From when they say, even if you assume that he should have moved immediately, I mean, you know, then he really did. How fast? I mean, you have to kind of do a little bit of your own internal digging to understand what's going on. You can't just get rid of somebody right away. I mean, it was on, what, 3 weeks max? Come on.
He didn't have trouble getting rid of somebody right away when it was the acting attorney general who didn't do what he wanted. That was that was done in an instant. Snap of the fingers, gone.
Yeah. Well, let me move, because we do have other issues to cover, too. What do you make of, Bill touched on this, Van, Vice Admiral Robert Harwood has turned down the offer to be President Trump's new national security advisor. There was some public reasons that it was, you know, personal and family reasons, but others have said that he thought there was too much turmoil to step into this administration. What's your thought?
My thought is, I mean, he publicly said, the quote I read is that he had family considerations. And on that, I would say anybody who wants to play one of these roles is kind of a nut, because I'm sure it would. He'd be ripped away from his family while he was doing it. On the other hand, I think that this points out a problem that the White House needs to address, which is they tell too much about stuff before then it's actually been finalized, and they need to cut that out. And the other thing is they need to have lists, I would say, of multiple people that might be potentially appointed, and they need to give more than one person, and they need to stop leaking who it is that they want to appoint. Let me give you an example. Elliot Abrams, who was considered to be the Deputy Secretary of State. Now, evidently, Tillerson and Reince Priebus went to Trump with this name and said, we want to be have him be Deputy Secretary of State. Never go to a president with one option. You know, that's an area where they need to get better. And then don't say anything in the press about it until it's all been finalized, if it's going to be finalized.
Just a point of fact, I heard this on the way over to the studio this morning on the National Public Radio news report that there's talk that Robert Harwood didn't take the job because he was told he wouldn't be able to appoint his own senior staff, that he'd be stuck with the people that Mike Flynn brought in there, which was, you know, not acceptable. So there was possibly more to it than, you know, his abiding interest in spending time with his family.
I'm going to take a couple more calls as we have full lines, but we're going to be moving away from the news conference and the media bias. That's what everybody wants to talk about right now. Jess in Milwaukee. Hi, Jess.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I didn't vote for either candidate because I didn't like either candidate. There wasn't one better than the other or worse than the other type of thing. They didn't appeal to me. Donald Trump was not elected, though, to be presidential. He was elected to shake up the establishment, and part of the establishment within politics is the media itself. And there is a lot of fake news, but I don't want to use that term because it's more propaganda. There's a lot of stories that have been going on for decades, not just recently, but decades, that have been false news.
Like what?
Okay, or false narratives. As an example, when we got into Vietnam and they said the Gulf of Tonkin incident was, happened, and it didn't. It turns out it didn't happen the way it's been reported on getting us into Vietnam.
Right, because the government put out false information about it.
And the media did not investigate. They just went along with it. When there's Bilderberg meetings all over the world with political and business leaders and so on, and the media is invited and they never report on it.
Yeah, so
well, if that's the case you have against the media, that yeah. When government says untrue things and the media report them without contradicting them, then you have to appreciate it when media push back and they say, hey, what this government official just said is untrue. Hey, what Trump has just declared is demonstrably false. If you're going to fault the media for not performing that function, you have to respect it when they do.
I'm going to move on to another call that will maybe bring us to some other topics as well. Gina in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Gina.
Hi. I just spent the evening. I think we need to discuss real quickly the big flashy neon elephant in the middle of the room, and that is Scott Pruitt. There are many emails that our representatives are waiting for regarding his suing of the EPA and taking the side of, big oil and the polluters. And he's being voted on today for, our protection, our EPA.
Yeah. Van Mobley, should Pruitt be confirmed as EPA secretary?
Yes, Pruitt should be confirmed as EPA secretary.
Yeah, and Bill, what do you think?
I think he's a dangerous pick for that job. I think he's anti-environment. This issue that the caller raises is really important. This is a Wisconsin organization, the Center for Media and Democracy, which requested emails from Pruitt in his role of Attorney General, and he sat on those requests until they sued him over it, and now it's been determined that he must turn these emails over. We really ought to wait and hold the process up for a few days so that people can see the information that he was trying to hide and which a Wisconsin organization is forcing him to bring into the open.
Yeah. In other cabinet-related news, Andrew Puzder withdrew as President Trump's nominee for Labor Secretary. Trump named a new choice for Labor Secretary yesterday, Alexander Acosta. Do you have any reaction to that particular situation, Van, where the Labor Secretary did not get confirmed, in part because some of the GOP senators were against him?
Well, I think Acosta is a good pick, and it may be better than the original pick, in which case I would just say maybe the system's working.
I agree with you on that. Maybe the system's working. No. Puzder was just, again, he was being appointed to be Labor Secretary, and he's anti-labor. He has opposed increases in the minimum wage. His businesses have been sacked with $20 million in fines for violating wage and hour laws. You know, he opposed even allowing breaks to workers after a certain of time. We don't need our Labor Department headed by someone who wants to put the screws to working people.
I'm going to bring in a call on this topic. Ed in West Dallas is with us. Hi, Ed.
Well, this was a great victory for those of us in organized labor. We were tremendously focused on this Pruzder nomination, and it just shows that Mr. Trump is nothing more than a union hater and a union buster. And this is going to resonate. This is going, because we're focused, this is going to have an effect in the 2018 gubernatorial election.
I'm going to jump in because we're almost at break time. And Van, what do you think?
I think that Trump is a good friend to unions and union workers because he's interested in a lot of things that they are, like infrastructure improvements, and he didn't sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which unions were against correctly. And I think that actually, over time, the relationship between Donald Trump and the unions will surprise many people.
Hope springs eternal. Yeah.
Governor Walker, this wasn't this week, but he said that he was talking to Mike Pence about how elements of Act 10 could be implemented nationally, Bill.
Yeah, I think there'll be some interest in trying to do that, to try to break the federal unions the way that Scott Walker busted public employee unions in Wisconsin. I think it will have somewhat of the same consequence. In fact, this was foreseen ahead of the Trump's election, that we will have that type of discord that we saw in Wisconsin on the national level as the rights of people to form unions within the federal government is attacked.
We're going to take our break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Day Without Latinos rallies, and we will talk about some other state news. There is news that Congressman Sean Duffy is not going to challenge Senator Tammy Baldwin, and more. And we'll welcome more of your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in the news this week. Bill Leaders is with us. He is the managing editor of The Progressive Magazine. And Van Mobley is with us, an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, president of the Village of Thiensville. He also writes a regular column for the Ozaki News Graphic. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you would like to join in. As we talk about right now, the Day Without Latinos rallies and marches, there were thousands in Milwaukee. They were also protesting the Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark's crackdown on immigration. Bill Leaders, what are your thoughts on the immigration crackdown and the rallies that we're seeing?
Well, the protest yesterday was to stress the importance of Latino people to our workforce, to take a day off and see what happens. The fact is, our economy can't function without the contributions of Latino workers. Look in the state of Wisconsin; much of the dairy industry is dependent on Latino workers, including migrants who come to our state, and the idea of us somehow or other being better off or even being able to cope, to survive without this component of our labor force is folly. Add on to that the fact that you have people like Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark who want to deputize their deputies, their officials, in order to be, ad hoc immigration agents, that they're going to be rounding people up and shipping them off, people who they come in contact with because they're law enforcement, and occasionally people in this world need the assistance of law enforcement. There's a case that was talked about on cable news last night by Chris Hayes, I think this is another state, I'm sorry, I don't remember, but a woman was arrested when she came to testify in a domestic violence hearing. She was the victim of domestic violence, and she showed up to be a witness in the trial against the person who abused her and was dragged off by immigration authorities. And guess who was that tipped off the immigration authorities as to her immigration status? It was the guy who beat her up. Think about that. Is that really what we want to be happening in this country?
Van? Your thoughts on the uptick in deportations and the rallies we're seeing?
I think we have in place now laws on immigration that should be followed, and I'm not for illegal immigration, but I think immigration is a good thing, and I think that Donald Trump is shooting us toward a place where we can be law-abiding on this issue.
You know, one other, this is a national issue with a state connection. I meant to ask you both about the reports that White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, former GOP party chair here in Wisconsin, former RNC chair for that matter, that he is on thin ice because of the tumultuous times that we read about anyway with the beginning of this administration. Van, Governor Walker came to Reince Priebus's defense. Are you coming to his defense too?
I understand the difficulty of getting a government up and running, and I think that all of them are improving, which was what I said earlier. And so, you know, I think that they're going to get much better going forward, and then we'll all be happy.
Well, I wouldn't come to
that includes Reince as well.
I wouldn't necessarily come to Reince Priebus' defense, but I don't think that his position is in jeopardy. This was a concern raised by that Newsmax guy, you know, about what terrible job he was doing, and it was seen that if the Newsmax guy felt that way about him, that made him vulnerable. I don't think so. I think that, you know, despite all of his failings and faults, he's going to keep that job at least for now.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you would like to join our Week in Review, we are talking now about some state issues. So Congressman Sean Duffy announced yesterday he is not going to challenge Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin in 2018. Does that surprise you, Van?
No, I mean, that would be one of the same things that I'd say about with Harvard. It's, you know, it's kind of a big deal to run for the U.S. Senate. It's a lot of time and work. I think that there'll be plenty of good Republican candidates. Vukmir, Nicholson, Cuyunga, Fitzgerald, Hovde maybe, and then this could even get even bigger. So they'll have a good we'll have a good candidate, and I think that Tammy Baldwin will be taken out.
Well, you know, none of those people who you mentioned who are considered in the running, including Scott Fitzgerald, too, have ever won a statewide race, which Tammy Baldwin has a couple times. And, you know, she beat Tommy Thompson. That's a pretty big name. I think she's established that she has support of people in the state. Another thing, you know, I knew Tammy Baldwin when she was on the Dane County Board. I knew her when she was in the state assembly. I knew her when she was a member of Congress, and now she's a member of the U.S. Senate. And I think that 2 years from now, the idea of having people be in public office who know something about the job and who are experienced and professional and have a legacy and a history of public service is going to be seen as a plus.
Yeah. Bill, what was that that feud that Tammy Baldwin and Governor Walker got into on Twitter in the last couple of weeks?
I forget the particulars, but I do know that Tammy kind of challenged Walker and said, well, you don't like it, run against me.
Yeah.
Which I think shows she has a certain amount of confidence in the amount of support that she has.
So does Governor Walker want to run against her, Van?
I don't know why he would. I would rather be a governor than a senator, but that's my own personal predilection. So,
well, the governor is busy with the state budget. Well, he actually unveiled his state budget. Now the state legislature is busy marking it up and figuring out what to do with it. One of the things in that state budget was the elimination of the DNR's magazine. Is that a big deal or not, Bill?
I think it's a really big deal. This comes on the heels of the disclosures that the website of the DNR was purged of references to climate change. The governor now wants to kill the Wisconsin Natural Resources magazine, which has been around nearly 100 years. It's entirely supported by subscribers and by people who buy these Uber hunting licenses. I believe it continues that same kind of crackdown on the dissemination of information that we've seen within the DNR. The former editor of this publication talked about how stories that she wanted to run were spiked. There's a story about how climate change affects mammals in Wisconsin that was killed by others within the DNR. There's a story about how an endangered species whose primary habitat was a proposed site of a controversial mine, how that story was killed. So there's been political interference in the life of this magazine in the past. Now they just want to do away with it, even though it won't save any money for taxpayers because taxpayers aren't paying for it. The people who want to buy this magazine are. And by the way, this magazine has 88,000 subscribers. That's good. That's a good amount of subscribers to have for a state publication. People like it. Why take it away?
Why take it away, Van?
I would say this is maybe one of those things where if it is totally subscription-driven, then maybe you can have a spinoff and have the same thing, and it'll just then it'll go as a freestanding thing. I'm not opposed to that.
What do you mean, have it not the DNR staff putting it out, but a private enterprise putting it out?
Sure, why not? I mean, they do it. People come to, for example, they come to the Village of Thiensville all the time, and they basically put out little magazines, you know, the marketing pieces and stuff like that, and they do it more or less. I think we just did one a while back where we started with some seed money, and then they take it away, and they do a good job. They make money, then we don't have to pay for them.
Or maybe they can't survive that way. You know, the death of a publication is a terrible thing. Let's not let it happen. Yeah. Let's stick up for this magazine.
There is a primary election on Tuesday, the 21st of February. I think like 5% of the eligible voters will participate in this. But the one statewide race that's on the ballot is for state superintendent of public instruction. There are two challengers for the incumbent, Tony Evers. The superintendent of public instruction is Tony Evers, and he faces two challengers. The primary election will whittle this down to, the top two finishers will move on to the spring election. In the news this week, we learned that one state superintendent candidate says his opponent made an offer saying, hey, drop out of the race, and then if I win, I will give you a job at the Department of Public Instruction. And this came out this week. And Van, have you been following this story, and is this a big deal to you?
I only followed it after I got just last day or so. And actually, it's not a big deal to me. I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm going to vote for Lowell Holtz. So that's it. And people should go out and vote. One of the things that we worry about in these early spring elections is there won't be anybody there to make the choice. So people should study the three candidates and make their choice. But make sure you go out and vote.
Lowell Holtz is the one who's accused of making this offer to his opponent, John Humphreys. I'm going to take this in a little bit different direction. One of the issues in this case is that there's a couple of versions of a document. One apparently made at a previous point of in time than another, and both of them were presented as printed out documents. And a newspaper that did some reporting on this, probably more than one newspaper, the Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin State Journal, obtained the electronic version of one of these records. It was able to search the history to see when it had been changed and updated as a way of answering some questions about the disparity between those two documents. That underscores that electronic records are fundamentally different from paper records. And people may know I'm the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. May know I'm filing. I filed a lawsuit against a state lawmaker to try to establish that as a matter of law, people are entitled to electronic records in electronic form, not just to be given a printout of them. And this underscores that electronic records have additional relevant information that the public should be able to see.
By the way, we will talk about more state issues coming up on our state capitol report on Monday. We will have a former editor of the DNR magazine that is going to be cut from the budget with us. We will also talk with Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout about some lesser-known details of the state budget that she is concerned about. In our final minute, let me just ask you both what are you looking for this week when it comes to news out of Washington in particular. What are you going to be watching, Bill?
I want the media to push back against the president. I want the media to stand up for itself, and I want the public to stand up for the media and the value that it brings to our democracy, and to not let us get kicked around, to not let us be abused, and to recognize that it is a legitimate function of the press to ask questions, and it is a responsibility of government officials, including the president, to answer them and not just rebuff them and not just, you know, say silly things and react in a huff. That's what I want to see. I want my profession to be respected.
Van, what are you going to be watching for?
I think that the Trump administration needs to focus on getting itself staffed up and so continue to move forward on that issue. I would like to see the Republicans in the House and the Senate, instead of commenting on Trump, start really focusing on some of this legislation that they need to move and, running the committee hearings and doing everything that they need to do on that side.
One thing that could happen that would help that along is if Trump stops commenting on Trump, but I'm not sure we're going to see that anytime soon.
You know what? Monday at this time, we are going to mark President's Day with an examination of the Trump administration so far and the recently concluded Obama presidency. That's Monday on President's Day. Coming up here on the Ideas Network. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Van Mobley, Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Bill Leaders, the Managing Editor of The Progressive Magazine. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.